Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Universal Awareness Radio Show. My name's Linda Jocelyn, and I'm your host for today's show. And we have a guest coming on, and I think I might have her on air here. This is going to be, I hope, Barbara Harvey, who was our 1,000th member on our network at Universally Aware on Ning. Let me just see, open up Barbara and see if she's there. Hi, is that Barbara on 0586?
Hi, Linda. Barbara here.
How lovely. We've never spoken. We've never had anything to do with each other, have we? Just that you...
No, we have.
Just that you arrived on the network. I think this is really exciting. I did speak to you on chat on Facebook, which wasn't really hearing each other, but just chatting messages. And, you know, asked you to just give me a quick background information. And I was astounded because you could have been anybody that landed on our network. After, you know, the 1,000th person, who was it going to be? You know, and I just thought it was astounding what a warrior you are with your background. How do you feel about yourself with everything you've gone through?
Well, actually, right now, I'm very much in present time. So whatever's gone on in the past, whatever I've experienced, is a memory. It's an experience, and at this point in time, I'm talking with you.
I know.
I'm going to thoroughly enjoy this.
And it's great, isn't it? And tell me, you know, because you know, people land on our network and they decide to join up because they like what we put there, or they find it informative. A lot of what we put there, they're not going to actually like as such in some ways, because we put a lot of truth videos up there. But we're putting up stuff to keep people awake to what's really going on and to get them to go into their higher self, you know. So what made you just turn up there?
Well, I think exactly what you've just said is that I found a lot of information on your website that I don't find anywhere else, and it makes sense to me, and I'm thinking, good grief, you know, it's about time we begin to hear the truth and read it, and that's why I really enjoyed your program and the people that you speak to.
Brilliant. Great, that's lovely. I'm glad that we're helping, you know, because I set the network up about 3 years ago, and it's quite interesting because we don't keep all the spammers on there. A lot of people get their networks up to thousands and thousands and thousands, but there's a lot of people join just to put out sort of spamming information to all the members, and we're very strict on that, so we whip them off immediately. We've actually got rid of thousands of people that were just there to spam, and so we only reached our 1,000th member recently because we took all the others out, you know. And it's quite interesting that, as I say, that it was somebody as interesting as yourself, you know. I can imagine you don't want to go into all details of your background, but what I'm interested in, and what the listeners are going to be interested in, is how was your awakening journey? Because, you know, even to read the stuff we have on the network or to want to hear more, there's going to have been awakening moments for you.
Uh-huh. Well, I was divorced in 1976, and it was an extremely difficult time for me. My sons, who live in England, stayed with their father, and for me it was just devastating. I hadn't done anything to... I had made a choice that I felt, because I couldn't afford to take care of my sons myself, that the best place for them would be to stay with their father. That was a really difficult choice for me, because I'm was the one who had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, what I did was, and for many, many years, you know, I cried. But it isn't behind me, but what I have done is that very shortly after I divorced, I came across a man by the name of Adnan Serhan. Adnan is a Sufi. He's a master Sufi. And I did work with him in London as many weekends as he was there, and I have continued to follow him here. I'm now in California, and he comes here several times a year. If I can meet up with him, I do. He does travel to Spain, is a very popular place, but he is an incredible person who really, through his work, which is very powerful, I got to the point where I knew where my center was, even if my life around me seemed to be falling apart. We danced, we chanted, we meditated, we did yoga, we did breath work. The breath work is extremely important for all of us to do all the time, just being concentrated on our breath. And so Adnan was the springboard for me. He is the person who, for 35 years now, I have worked with him whenever I can. And there have been others. More recently, in 2008, when I, as a notary public signing loan documents, I suddenly didn't have any work. I was contracting out. And I really enjoyed that work because I was meeting people all the time and you know, listening to their stories and helping them with their paperwork one way or another. But the banking system fiasco got me, well, it put me out of my home. I had been renting a really nice condo with my daughter, and we rented a room for about 8 years, had a beautiful garden, very comfortable, work was going well, and suddenly no work. Well, we had to leave the condo. I lived in my CRV with my two golden retrievers for about 5 months, simply because I had no way of paying rent. And my daughter lived with friends, and that worked out. So one way or another, you know, we made it through. One thing that did help me, quite frankly, was that within about 6 weeks of my living in my car, the media got hold of the story that we had a safe parking program here in this town, in Santa Barbara. And at that point, I was part of that. I had just become part of that program where I parked in a safe place every night in a parking lot that was locked. And there were about five or six other women, too, with their cats or their dogs in their cars. So CNN actually was another opportunity for me to talk about being in the present moment. And at that time, of course, I'd been reading a lot of Eckhart Tolle's books, of course, The Power of Now, listening to his tapes, really enjoying his work. I mean, and I still go on the website listening to him and his lectures. And his just continually reading those books and realizing, hey, you know, right now I'm breathing, my dogs are doing fine, we've just been fed, we're going to settle down for the night and have a good night's sleep and we're safe. I mean, just being there in that time, knowing that, well, this is all there is right now. You know, is there anything else I should be concerned about? And there wasn't.
And that's incredible. Yeah, that you're giving such incredible pointers here, because that is how we get it, isn't it? That's how we get it when we're put in situations like that.
Yeah. And I think all of the difficulties that we experience are an opportunity to realize that there's part of this experience which is we're in this experience, we're in present time, and the fear that we have is actually of the future, or how are we going to manage, or you know, whatever fears people have, but it's still a future thing. So to step back right back into the moment, There actually, unless we're confronted with something which is actually a threat, then there is no reason to be fearful. And even at that point, if we could just breathe, we might even get to some kind of threat as well.
Absolutely, because the breath, you're absolutely right there, I feel, too, with the breath, because the breath just is our saving grace. Because if you get connected to your breath, you come out of anything that you put yourself in, because it's all illusion, isn't it? And when you come out to the breath, and you're together with that breath, and you are that breath, then you're in the now moment.
Absolutely. You know, I'm doing this all the time, and when I'm walking the dogs and they decide they don't want to go, they want to go opposite directions, then I stop and I say, okay, I'm going to breathe for a moment and see which way we're going, because and there's so many things. I mean, we're breathing all the time, but if we become conscious of breathing and noticing our breath and noticing how we're breathing, are we holding our breath? If we are, start breathing and breathe comfortably and sit and breathe comfortably and breathe through everything. We have to just breathe through it. I mean, our breath is just amazingly powerful if we know how to use it, as far as settling ourselves into the present time.
And it feels beautiful, doesn't it, when you get connected and you are, and you're riding on that wave of your breath, then you feel good. You cannot feel bad. I always say this to people, you cannot feel bad if you're in the now moment. You cannot be in fear if you're in the now moment. It's impossible, because there is no fear in the now moment. And some people get it if they have actually started using techniques like being present with your breath, being conscious of your breath. Then they get it, don't they? But if people haven't started doing any of these disciplines, they don't get it. See, I can hear. I mean, even though you're not going to be seeing Adnan, the guy, that the Sufi guy, all the time, you're going to be practicing, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I can just bring him to mind and feel his energy. And that's a nice thing, too, is you begin to feel a teacher's energy. Even if, I mean, they're not present, but you still feel them. And you can touch them, and they know, and you know you're in contact with them. That's
I love that, because I came through the disciplines of Muraji, who gave us the four methods of getting in touch with your own vibration. And people used to say to me, oh, you're just worshipping a guru, because I had pictures of him in the house, but it wasn't anything like that. It was that Muraji reminded me, every time I looked at his face, it reminded me to be in touch with who I really was. And if you're not, if you've never been taught by a master and had that impression from a master of their vibration, you don't get that, do you? You don't get what you're saying there.
No. It really does take being with someone who is a teacher, who is a master teacher. I recently met Amma, who is the most beautiful, beautiful lady. She is Indian. She is just a saint. And this was a day of blessing. There must have been at least 400 people who came and went during the day. I think I was there for about 5 hours waiting just to be blessed. And this beautiful, beautiful being, it's hard to describe the feeling of being in her presence and knowing that she truly is doing a blessing. She is blessing me. She is blessing everyone who saw her that day. And I mean, I just walked out of there thinking, oh my God, you know, this is, I felt so grateful for that opportunity. I'd had quite a bit of sadness still, actually, from having left my son. And I knew that it was still there, and I needed for my sake and everybody else's sake, just to let that go and to have that behind me. And she blessed me. I told her what was going on. She blessed me. And from that point forward, I didn't feel that sad, that heavy sadness, which I had not been able to get rid of. You know, I hadn't done anything about it, or I had not let go of it. But that day was a blessing, truly.
And that is amazing, isn't it? We used to call it Darshan when we were in front of Muraji on the rare occasion, because he also travels the world and gives all sorts of knowledge to everybody that wants it, you know, so he's always on the move. But that was truly a blessing as well. And I felt so humble. I mean, I felt totally ignorant in front of him, in his presence when I met him. When I met him close, like a few inches away, I remember thinking, God, I'm nothing. I mean, it was right in the beginning of my journey, and it was like, who am I to be standing in front of this resonance, this man, this vibration, you know? And I needed to do that at the time. I needed to be there at that point and have that surrender, you know. But do you now sort of, you know, with the fact that your sons will always be your sons, I was just thinking of that. Do you see that now, that you're always with them anyway? We're all one. And that's the bit to put in place, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, you're right. And I do feel one with them. And, you know, we all get on Facebook and share with so many people, which is, of course, how I came to know you, was on Facebook. So, yes, we are all one. And it's pretty awesome, isn't it?
I think it is too. And you know, I have this picture, I can't get it out of my mind, this picture of you in your car, you know, nowhere else to go but your car, but it's all still okay because you can be in the now moment, and there's a, and you've got your Did you say you got your dog there with you, or your cats, or something?
I have two golden retrievers. They're 112 pounds or something. So we all left in my CRV. I don't know how we did it quite, but we did. And we were comfortable.
So there's you and your two golden retrievers. And then there's other women. You said you're in this parking lot that's locked at night and it's all safe. And there's other women in their cars with their dogs or their pets.
Yes.
It just shows you where we're going in this life and what people are prepared to do, you know, and still be okay, you know. It's quite amazing, isn't it? It sends shivers down my spine when I think of all this, because it's the fact that you can talk about it without resentment and that you know it's just part of the journey, you know. Were you able to help them?
Oh, yeah. Some women actually didn't want to share their experience or anything. They wanted to be on their own. And there were other women who we did share with. We would get together and go and have a cup of coffee somewhere or a cup of tea or just chat, you know, in the evening before settling down. And they were very strong women.
Mm.
You know, some found it difficult and parts of it were. But all in all, I've seen a few women around. A few of those women in town, and well, we're fine.
The other thing about this is that you were somebody who was a notary who was signing all those mortgage documents and things. So this is mind blowing as well, isn't it? Because this is so much in the news now about all the falseness of all that, isn't it? That all the, you know, that the mortgages are just made up anyway. They make you pay all this money, but they haven't actually given you any money. They just make it up on the computer. So we got all that going on. And there's you writing away, signing, you know, feeling like you were doing the right thing as well, because we've all done things like that. And then, you know, you got a good job.
Yeah.
You made your way in life, and then you end up in a CTV, in a car park, with a load of other women. I mean, the whole thing is kind of bizarre, really, but it's happening all over, isn't it? I was listening recently to somebody talking, it might have been on a radio show or something, or it was on a blog, about all these people living in the underground systems, in the tunnels in the United States now as well.
You know, I read that too. I was just amazed. I thought, you know, what are these tunnels for to begin with? That people are now able to live in them, but how awful! You know,
well, it is, isn't it? But then I suppose they do what you did, Barbara. They just get on. If they're awake and aware, they're just going to get on with it.
Just get on with it. Yes.
They're probably hanging curtains up and wall plaques up in the tunnels, you know, making it home. I mean, it's mind blowing, but it's, you know, it's like going back to the caves, isn't it? Back to the Stone Age time, if that ever existed. We don't even know whether that was real now.
No. I have, what was I going to say? It's gone. But, you were talking about the mortgages. And I know that as I was signing loan documents and going through this paperwork with people and listening to their comments sometimes, I was actually appalled that when they were going to receive some money that was extra, that, honey, we have enough money to go to Hawaii now, or, honey, we can go get that boat we wanted. And my eyes never rolled, okay, but I felt like rolling my eyes because I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, here's somebody who's really going to be in trouble. And there were probably about a dozen of those people and during that period of time that I thought, this is not a good loan, you know, or there's something wrong with this loan. There's something there's a good reason why this person shouldn't even be doing this, or if the mortgage company wasn't doing the right thing, or the bank. But I'm now working with a woman here in Santa Barbara with a small group, actually, of people who I'm doing just basic computer inputting of information on various loans that actually foreclose, well, where the property foreclosed. And in many cases, it was illegally foreclosed So while I have some time to do that, I felt that there was a real need for me to get in there and start helping out in that respect, because if we're moving towards that point where we're going to find out that there's properties here in this area that were foreclosed illegally, because they've lost their documents, they've lost their deeds, they've lost, I mean, banks, lost their, the deeds of trust, they have lost the notes. Good grief, how do you do that, you know, in a bank? But anyway.
But I think they pass them on, Barbara, don't they? Cases where most mortgage documents are not in the hands of the person that you got the mortgage from, because they've been sold on maybe 3 or 4 times after that. They're sold on, aren't they? And so they never show you the documents. I think that's why all mortgages are fraud.
Oh, I think so, too. I've mentioned to people at times that you're never going to see your note, by the way, even if you pay this off. You know, you're not going to see that note that you signed. And that's the case.
Yeah.
It's coming to the point now where, as I keep on reading about the banks, and of course it's all over the news and the internet and Facebook, where things are beginning to happen that will hopefully help people keep their home who may be a little under, or else people might be have compensation for having lost their home illegally. Who knows?
I hope that happens. I don't know who to believe, really. I mean, I've heard so much recently about how everything's going to be sorted out financially, and I keep moving away from it now, even looking at any of it, because I keep thinking I've heard it for the last 3 years. And I can't, you know, in that 3D world, it doesn't appear to me that it's ever going to be sorted out on any honest equality level, because that involves everybody moving into the heart. And what I experience out in the world is with everybody going on, you know, still carrying on with their businesses, is that ain't happening no time soon. And I think until we get a wave, another wave of energy coming in, which I truly believe is going to happen, that the energy is really going to ramp up, then people are going to have to change. But I think there'll be a lot of stress before that truly happens. But I can't see any of these financial schemes coming through. I just can't. I've seen so many and read so many, and I keep thinking, oh, my God. You know, there's clubs now where people pay into the clubs, and they're all thinking they're going to get paid out some point. Yeah, and I mean, there's all sorts going on. And then we've got this whole thing about everything's been foreclosed on anyway, coming through Opt, which I've never gone along with. I just don't see it. If I don't see it happening in the world, then as far as I'm concerned, it's not happening. It's not happened. And I think, again, a lot of people are being pulled into something quite fuzzy there as well. But I think what if we just, you know, what I hear in you is that you're governed by what you are and what you've found out and how you've operated in your life at times when you needed to operate on the highest, you've been able to do it. I mean, through your what you know, your breath, your dance, your Sufi understanding of the Sufi, whole Sufi spirituality, and actually practicing them, that is so precious, isn't it? That's like liquid gold. See, to me, the liquid gold I have is the breath I breathe and the experience I get from that when I'm conscious of that. I see that as my gold in my life. And I'm sure you do.
I do, because I don't have any gold.
No, me neither.
Gold necklace, maybe, but that's about it. So, but no, this is being able to use the breath and what I've learned to overcome, you know, situations or just to be in the present moment is a gold mine as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what I would have done without it, quite honestly. And I've read a lot of books, too. I mean, I've Eckhart Tolle and, His Holiness the Dalai Lama with the Art of Happiness, various Sufi books, Israt Khan, Hazrat Inya Khan, and Rachel Field, Edra Schott, James Dillman, oh my goodness, you know. And recently I read a book by, what was his name here? I just happened to have this on my desk. Walter Russell. Oh, good grief. What a read that was. called The Message of the Divine Iliad. This
right, I haven't read that. That sounds like a good title.
This is a gem. And a friend of mine many years ago, Mary, who passed away, she had given me this book to read. And, you know, I had it on my bookshelf, and it's got quite a few other books. And it just sort of sat there. And one day I happened to notice it, and I thought, what is that? Anyway, I got it down, and I really couldn't put it down. This amazing, amazing read. I mean, this man is incredible. And this is just volume one. There's another volume two somewhere. I'm going to have to find that. But Walter Russell.
Walter Russell. Have to look him up.
Iliad. He is brilliant. So I think,
when you're reading, it's that they tell you something. See, when I think of Eckhart Tolle, I think that some people read the books, and there are little ideas in there, I think, of how to get to that now moment, aren't there? He doesn't do an actual practice, from what I gather. I mean, I've quickly read through his books because I ran workshops on how to be in the now moment decades ago. So I didn't run to get his books, but I've heard that he does put little pieces in there, because that's what you need, isn't it? It's not just reading these books, is it? It's taking in something that's going to help you in what you do in your life and how you do it, how you act in your life, how you are conscious or not conscious in your life.
I agree. What I have come to realize is there's what I'm reading at the time, there is a certain energy put into that book by the author. There is, suddenly you become part of this author, part of this Sufi or this spiritual person. And that's what I have found with Hazrat Khan's books. There's one here, Philosophy, Psychology, Mysticism, The Sufi Message. I begin to feel so much a part of what he's saying that, and it's true. You know, what I'm reading is absolutely true. And I think, well, I can't disagree with this. I don't want to, but it feels right. And so there's a lot of this writing, and I think that's with Eckhart Tolle. I think even I watch him from time to time. He's sort of gone beyond the place he was when he wrote The Power of Now. There is a new, different energy about him that is very, very comfortable to be with.
Yes, and there is. I noticed that. There is. He's growing, which we all do, don't we, as we move on our path. And you can feel more of that now moment in him now, rather than just reading about it. You can actually feel it more, I think. And that's what I think. We should be a living example of that, shouldn't we? And I think we get that. You know, we get a reminder in the books. I think that's surely what we do. We get a reminder because we resonate with whoever's writing that book and the energy they've put in it. But then I think it's so important that people put things into action. Like you've said, you do breath work, which is the Sufi way. You do the dance. You do other things there that are to do, obviously the yoga, meditation. Do they do meditation?
Absolutely.
So you're reading and you're resonating, and that brings you back. I know, but the practices are the daily thing, aren't they? They're our daily bread, aren't they? I think it's so important to say that to people who are just beginning, is that it's not just reading about somebody else's experience. That does help us. I think that's like a fix sometimes, and it brings us back to that resonance. But it's about us doing the daily practices ourselves.
Yes, it is. Yeah, very much so. And I always go back to the breath when I'm walking the dogs, when I'm driving, when I'm cooking, whatever it is, and speaking with you, I come back to the breath. And I hold my breath, you know? My breathing, and it puts me in the present time every time if I question whether I'm breathing or not.
It shuts that mind up, doesn't it? I mean, I do it all the time. I can be in all sorts of situations, and it's just, you know, the conscious breath, just being so aware of the breath again, and it just takes me totally back where I need to be.
Yeah, right to the center, and right.
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
Right.
It's so simple. I mean, there's nothing complicated about that, is there? There's nothing complicated about it. I wish more and more and more people will get this, because that can be a real starting point for people always to come back to the breath.
Yeah, always. Just sitting 10 to 15 minutes a day, even to begin with, just sitting there and just noticing your breath. Just let it breathe. Just let the body breathe. You know?
Yeah. With nothing, and bring your attention back to that breath, because it's going to go off. It's going to randomly talk about everything, you know, if you're not practiced at this. And then just bring it back. Don't argue with it. Just stop it. Bring it back. Bring it back to the breath. It's a living exercise, isn't it?
Yes. Perfect.
You know, so you started with all the Sufi things and all the disciplines and the spiritual thing, even just after your divorce, you'd met the Sufi man, you'd started listening, learning, practicing. When did you start waking up to the truth of the information we've been given on the world? Because you wouldn't get that necessarily from the Sufi side of it. It's like me, Miraji never talks, or certainly in the early days, going back 30 years ago, he certainly never talked about what was going on in the world. But there is that awakening as well, isn't there? There's the awakening in ourselves. And then we start to look around and see the world isn't the place they told it was. There's even lie upon lie. When did you get your awakening to that? Because I see many stages of this awakening for people. Mm-hmm. There's many layers of it.
Well, you're right about about Adnan, for instance. He would be in the present moment, and what's happening 10 blocks down the road, it doesn't concern him whatsoever. And so he's in his moment, in his space, and we're in his space. We're on our own space. And this is very comfortable. And then when I start, actually, I've always been very interested in what's going on in the world. I mean, if I had to use, I don't use much TV these days, but certainly have been attentive. There's a good Sunday program, for instance, with Fareed Zakaria on a Sunday morning. I always watch him because he, to me, is the epitome of telling the truth and also getting information out there to people. But Facebook has been very important to me in getting more information about what's going on, because I'm here in California. I have friends, of course, I have family and friends in England. And so whatever's going on there, I get news from there, and then I get sites to access, and then I can go searching myself. So I have learned an enormous amount of information about what's going on in this world politically, which is totally appalling. I mean, this is the part that I have to believe now, because it happened and it is happening, and I'm not hearing that anything is happening in the government in the States. There's nothing seems to be happening except when you hear about congressmen taking their vacation. But nothing else seems to be happening. In fact, I'll tell you, I've been out of work for 5 months as a notary because the state of California reduced its staff in the Secretary of State's office, and that's where I get my new commission from every 4 years. And
right.
I just November last year, and finally I'm just about to get my new stamp so I can start working again. That's to me is appalling. Yes.
Mm.
I've actually been put out of work by the state of California, not having enough people working for it.
And they couldn't pay them, could they? From what I heard, what we heard over here was that the state of California was nigh on bankrupt. Did it actually go bankrupt as a state?
Oh, I think it's probably bankrupt. Yes, I have no idea. I really don't know whether it's bankrupt or not. I think that I'm not sure what's going on with this state, okay? I would actually like to leave myself, but perhaps I shall. However, so the answer to your question about my awakening as far as what's going on in the world is it's been gradual. I have to determine for myself whether somebody is maybe telling the truth or not, and frequently we found that they're not. And Facebook has been very important to me, as I said, just to get the information from Europe and all over the world, actually. I mean, I've learned a lot about Australia. I've learned a lot about South America and Europe and, you know, the Middle East as a result of being on Facebook. And then I can spend 12 hours a day. You know, I think yesterday, or whenever it was Sunday, a couple of days ago, I think I was on Facebook for about 12 hours reading, just getting information.
I know, I've done that myself, hour after hour. I mean, at the moment, I'm trying to wean myself, because there's so many things I want to do in my life and my home and my garden, and then we've just got the spring here that's just coming through now, and it's getting warm. I've actually weaned myself off going on there so much, but I'm still the same, and I've been on there for years. I'm sure you have. But I learn and learn. I'm still learning so much about things I didn't know about and things I thought was one way and is another. So I think it's totally invaluable. A lot of people moan about Facebook, but I agree with you. It's been totally invaluable to me for my journey, because I've been able to and also it increases your discernment, doesn't it? Like you said, you have to discern, you know. It really teaches you that.
You have to decide, oh my goodness, that's such a story. But suddenly I realized, well, this is not the truth, you know. And then you can, and there's other things I read, and I think, okay, well, no, that's true. Now that rings true, but I really have to go with my gut feeling, my intuition as to whether something is true or not as well. And so that's what I've been doing.
And I think the word ring.
It's an eye-opener as far as the governments are concerned all over the world, I think. Could we manage to live without them? Probably.
Yeah, I think, if we can get together in community. See, I'm quite realistic. I mean, I'm an idealist in a lot of ways, but I'm also realistic in that we have to get to a point where people are more community-minded, more about the fact that we are the one. We're all one. We are all the awakening journey of humanity, aren't we? We're all part of that. And if only we could get more people to, I don't know, open their hearts. And that, I think, is what we're in for. I think more and more, as the energy rises, more and more people will. Because we must live without these so-called governments, because the governments aren't governments. They're corporations, aren't they? They're not there to govern.
Oh, that infuriated me so much when I found out that, you know, the governments are corporations. I beg your pardon. That you mean to say they can make money? They can take money from me? They can? I mean, I was nonplussed with that, really. And you know, there's one other thing I think about frequently these days, and that is that small communities have always worked together, and you know, they know one another. People, you know, whether there's 1,000 or 100 people in a community, they still work together and share and look after each other. And with the big cities that we have now, and people spread out, and people coming from 50 miles away to work in a town here, they don't know, people don't know one another, and they don't seem to care. I think that's unfortunate in many ways. I'd like to return to a small village or a small town where I can get to know the people.
Are you in a suburb there or in a, because you've got the town, I mean, the town's actually in, I'm just thinking of my time in California. It's all quite spread out and large,
yeah,
isn't it? Well, I remember going to L.A. and not even I didn't have a car. We were on foot, and you can't be in L.A. on foot. I mean,
no.
Madness. We were trekking with rucksacks on our backs, and you cannot do that in L.A. Wrong place, isn't it? But
yeah.
Where are you? Are you in a sort of right in the middle of a central place? Or?
Well, I live in Santa Barbara.
Uh-huh.
I also actually live downtown Santa Barbara, so I'm a very short distance from the actual center, you know, the shopping center. Now, I, apart from walking my dogs early in the morning downtown, I don't even go downtown to shop. I'm only a few blocks away. It drives me, it doesn't drive me crazy, but there's boatloads of people coming here these days. So they have about 30 ocean liners here this year parked in the ocean just off of our harbor area. And that means lots and lots of tourists, which is, I suppose, wonderful for them. But this town has changed so much in the last 30 years that I've lived here that I am really ready to move on. It's just become so, commercialized.
Yeah.
And so oriented towards money that's you know, the god that rules here, that I'm just not interested. It's a beautiful place. I take the dogs for a walk on Shoreline Park, and it's gorgeous. It's overlooking the ocean. We get some nice fresh air. We also get a lot of chemtrails, which I have a lot of photographs of. And, oh, interestingly, I have contacted three different media companies, three different areas of the media here in town, asking them if we could have a discussion about the big elephant in the living room, which is the chemtrails. And
right, that sounds amazing. Yeah. Have you got replies to that?
No, are you kidding? I'm not going to get a reply from that. I'm not going to get any replies. I even spoke to the air quality control person, director or whatever, yesterday, and I explained to him that I was very interested in knowing what these chemtrails were doing over Santa Barbara. How often, you know, how we had them so often. There were days and days and days to go by. And I took I've only taken 600 or 700 photographs of the chemtrails. And he said, 600 or 700? And I said, yes. I said, haven't you noticed? Don't you look up in the sky to find out what's going on up there? And he said, well, I will have to look into this. I shall have to look into this matter before I can give you an answer. And I thought, yes, you and the newspaper and the other newspaper and the government, nobody wants to address it at all.
But if you've had a conversation, you can go back on that, I reckon, couldn't you? Because he would have had to have logged that, surely. You can go back and say, hey, what did you think about that?
Yes, I can, actually. I'm sure he logged it, you know, and sure that... I've even had the meteorologist here in town on the local channel tell me that he doesn't know about chemtrails. And so I actually sent him an email, which is a little bit more forceful than my conversation, suggesting that he get himself informed about chemtrails because they are overhead. And if he is a meteorologist, a weatherman, he should actually hopefully happen to notice what's in the sky maybe once a day, but... You know, I think they must have sit on their computers all day long doing the weather. Who knows?
I'm amazed if he's a meteorology guy and he's not noticed. Did he just say what was his answer, did you say? He said...
His answer was, I don't know anything about...
Ah, right.
Chemtrails. I don't know anything about chemtrails.
So he might have noticed them, but he might not know them as chemtrails. Probably. Yeah, sounds like a bit of a confusing answer, doesn't it, that could be interpreted a lot of different ways, actually, I think. But I think we still have to do it. I've sent loads of stuff to the BBC, all the different newspapers. I've got all their email addresses, and every now and again, I used to do it a lot, but every now and again I do send them stuff. You know, through the internet. And sometimes I've seen the independent newspaper, which is the best one, suddenly do an article, a special on something, and I'm thinking, Jesus, I sent them stuff on that. I wonder if they've got somebody investigating. You just don't know, do you? But some of our newspapers are more willing to look into stuff than others. I mean, you've got to go with the right newspapers here to have any chance at all, you know.
Whereabouts are you? Are you in?
I'm in I'm in Suffolk, about 50 miles from London.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah.
I was born in Bedford and lived in London.
Uh-huh. Right, and that's why I was asking you about what sort of community you lived in, because here I'm back in my hometown at the moment because my daughter's around here, my dad who's very old, my mum's in a home here, so I came back. But it's a little market town, and what I was going to ask you about that was that, you see, here we have transition town movement where, you know, on last Saturday I went and when we're talking about community, I went and there was a free day where you took all the stuff you didn't want and you trot up into this hall and then you take anything you want from the hall.
A wonderful idea.
And it's transition town. And I know that America has this transition town stuff, doesn't it, going on?
I've never heard about this. There's
Catholic
charities or there's whatever, there's a Goodwill, but I've never heard of this transition. Perhaps they started off in the East Coast.
I don't know, but interestingly enough, next week I have a girl called, a journalist called Suzanne Possel coming on, because she's put out a lot of articles, not only about Agenda 21, but about transition towns, saying how evil they are and that it's the cabal that's organised it all. And I mean, I went to this transition town event just to see, and what happened when I got there was I met people that I knew 20 years ago, because I used to live here, and I was very much a part of the local community and organised local exchange trading and stuff. And when I went to this event on Saturday, the transition town event for the first time, there they all were. You know, there was people that I've known years there who used to always be involved in community. So I know it isn't evil in the UK. I'm wondering, so you haven't heard of it. I wonder, maybe Santa Barbara has one on the outskirts, or maybe they don't. I mean, that might be something.
I bet they don't. They keep a real lid on lots of things. There's a lot of rules around here because we have to have to consider the tourists who are going to pay everybody for their wares and their time and their everything else, the restaurants and what have you. So we really do have to be sure that we're doing the right thing always in this town. And we have markets, by the way. I want to say we do have two markets every week.
Oh, that's nice.
Tuesday with organic food, which is wonderful, and we might go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I was just going to say, people do need to get together in things that support them, like the Transition Towns events, or like bartering events, or just eco-friendly events, you know, where they can get together, talk about what they really want, maybe do a garden together, or make sure that the old people in the area have got food and grow a garden for them. Because over here we also do, there's schemes where you can go onto websites. Do you know, I can't remember what the name of it now, where you can go and have a look to see anybody who's offering land that they want cultivated to share, like old people who can't dig it any longer. They will share it with you. Yeah, there must be. There's lots of things you can do. We'll have to do a whole show on all this, actually, because there's so many things that you can do. And there are people in small groups out there doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'd be interested in finding out about the transition.
Have a look. Have a look on your Google it in Santa Barbara and see, because I know this girl's coming on to talk about it next week. And as I said, she sees it as negative. I'm going to enjoy talking to her about why she sees it as negative. But, it must be going on there. Otherwise, she wouldn't be writing about it. But I wonder just what they're doing in those transition groups. But certainly over here, we have very good ones. I've talked to other people in other towns, and they've got the same as what we've got. People just sharing, getting things going, you know.
Well, there is a real difference between the cultures. Between English culture, British culture, and the American culture. And I really have an issue sometimes with the American culture because it is very money-oriented. And there's lots of people here who do help one another. But you have to go to a very small place, a small village or a small town, to
right.
really have a sense of belonging, because people, they're coming from all areas. We have a huge student population in Santa Barbara because we have a university here as well as, a city college. Now, City College has something like 26,000 students, and the university has maybe 35. So that's a big student
yeah.
population. But I've made friends in my neighborhood. I mean, I have friends, lots of neighbors who are Spanish-speaking, and they love the dogs. That's what's really helped me to get to know people and just to have a pleasant time walking my dogs and talking with people, even if we don't talk the same language. You know, we just say hola or something or good morning. But the children especially like the dogs. And so the mothers are getting used to their children touching and stroking Phoebe and Ranger, which, you know, that's been really nice for me because I'm talking with people or I'm just sharing the doggies and the experience.
Dogs are really good for that, aren't they? Dogs and babies are really good at getting your introductions into people. It's very good. Because they move forward, you know, they're not bothered about etiquette, are they? You see, they don't work by the rules. They're really just their own bosses, and that's where we should be going. I mean, in your area, how about non-compliance? Because it's interesting talking to you, because you come from a certain community there, or where it's tourists and lots of students. I mean, is there much of the non-compliance going on where people are not paying now and saying, no, we're not going along with this, we're taking
not
back our sovereignty?
Nope, not at all. Nope.
Right.
It isn't happening. And it's just an interesting phenomena that I actually wanted to get a rally or protest going regarding Monsanto and put that information out. Just give me a call, you know, email me. Get on Facebook. Not a peep. No one. No one has. There are several rallies in and around Santa Barbara, one south of here in Oxnard. And Monsanto has a big company there, and there's already
right.
been enough objection to a rally down there that I think, well, I'm not going to that one. But there's one up in Arroyo Grande, for instance, up the coast, about 90 miles, and I should probably go to that one if we can't get anything going here. But it's interesting. People just sort of hang out and they do their own thing with their own group, and whatever's going on in the world, well, that's just somewhere else. We're here in Santa Barbara, and this is paradise, and we're not going to address that and talk about it.
They're quite asleep then. What you're saying is they're not awake and aware in general. They still need waking up.
No, they definitely need
right.
waking up. And I hope it's not with an earthquake. But
right.
they do need waking up. And there's a very large population here, actually, of people who are extremely wealthy. We have 12 billionaires alone living
right.
here. 12, and the rest of them are millionaires in the same area, mostly.
What about in the city? Do you have the homeless in your city in Santa Barbara?
Oh yes, we have lots. We have a lot of homeless. The number of homeless has dropped over the last year or so, or 2 years. There's many places they're not allowed to sit and go anyway, but. Yes, we have a Salvation Army where many homeless people spend the night and eat and shower. We've had more homeless in the past than we have now. And, you know, I see people sleeping out in the park in the center of town.
And the ladies in the car park, in their cars.
and the car park, we now have, you know, I think the person who runs this program, her name is Nancy Kapp, and she has, let's see, approximately, she's got a waiting list for one thing, and But there's 7 parking lots here in Santa Barbara. There's something like 400 people who are camping out in those parking lots every night.
Jesus, that's mind-blowing. Don't have that here in the UK.
There's a family, there's a couple with 4 children. They sleep in their vans. Now, to me, I thought I was roughing it. This is really roughing it. You know, there comes a time when they will find housing and they'll be helped to find a house. But even the low-income housing now that is offered, there aren't any more apartments or houses available for people who can't pay much money for, a place. I was on the housing authority. I had a housing authority apartment there for a while, and then the owner wanted to do something different with it. After that, my rent went up 3 times, and actually my daughters helped me pay for rent at times, because if I don't have an income, apart from Social Security, but we've worked it out, one way or another, it all goes down.
It's very interesting knowing that that sovereignty movement, that non-compliance movement, you haven't seen any of it going on in Santa Barbara, because, you get this, sometimes when you're on the internet, you've got people out there saying, oh, it's all happening, everybody's doing it. I don't see it here in the town I'm in England either. I mean, I know there might be a few people who know about the information from Facebook, but I don't see anybody doing the non-compliance thing. There's certainly no groups. I'm actually thinking of starting one, but are you thinking that about Santa Barbara? How about getting a group together and getting people into the non-compliance and understanding what you can do on the Freeman side?
Well, I'd certainly be interested in getting a group together. And I would have to, I'd have to read up more so that I know what I'm doing, of course. But, this is the thing in this town. With the number of students that are here, then we have a whole bunch of slum landlords. And the city won't do anything about slum landlords and the problems that people might have with the housing, because the tax man wants to be paid locally, and so slum landlords can carry on. And there's a lot of things which are totally overlooked in this town, and they're not talked about and not addressed, and we're all just fine. And because of the amount of advertising, I think that Santa Barbara must do, their tourist industry comes from afar, then they've got to keep the image of this town absolutely squeaky clean and no problems here. We don't ever have any protests. Very rarely do we have any protests.
Well, I was just going to say that. The revolution is definitely not happening in Santa Barbara, is it? I mean, this is good to get Barbara, isn't it? It's good to get real about it.
Absolutely, nobody's getting uptight here. It's dead in the water right now.
We'll have to keep in contact with you, and maybe you could go and ask at the you said you got a big university there. Maybe you could find out what's going on with the university students, because that would be good for us. Because what's the population of Santa Barbara?
Well, it's still 89,000 according to the signposts, but in fact, it's got to be about 125,000 people here in town.
Right.
And that doesn't include all the tourists, but...
No.
So it's 125,000.
So it's quite a big city, really. It's quite a city, isn't it? And it's got the harbour and everything. I think it would be really good to keep in contact with you and maybe do this in about a month's time and see... If you're willing, come on. I mean, we've been on here an hour now, Barbara. I know you were worried about 20 minutes, but you've done really well. And I've really enjoyed it. I'm sure everybody has.
I've enjoyed it very, very much. And I have forgotten that, that we're even doing anything other than a telephone phone call here.
So, well, that's the way to do it.
you're very lively. You keep it going nicely. You really do. You're incredible. And I've enjoyed, the programs in the past. And I've enjoyed this very, very much.
Good. And I'd love to keep in contact with it and have you on again, because I'd love to know. See, we get so many people who talk about what they say is going on across America. Well, we have contact with you and we want to know what's really going on the ground, not just with the one or two revolutionaries who say it's all happening, you know, and it's all hearsay. I mean, it's good to, because I certainly know, I've come back here, I've been back here a year, and I can't see anything happening like that where I am in Suffolk. It hasn't changed any, you know?
See, yeah. Well, in some ways, you're probably quite comfortable in many ways, aren't you? I mean, if nothing, what I'm trying to say is it's a community which is working quite well. Is that the case or not?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's all the same as everywhere in that nobody can pay their bills. I mean, I don't worry about it. Nobody's got the money. I mean, how old are you, Barbara? I think you may be about the same. Maybe you're a bit younger than me.
I'm older. I'm ancient. I'm 71.
Right, you sound so young. I'm 65, so 64. Well, I'm 65 this year.
We're within spitting distance anyway.
Yeah, we are. We're in spitting distance of each other, so we understand. And I mean, I know that if I got worried about bills, then I wouldn't be in a good state, but I don't. I just ignore it. And I have a way of intending them to disappear, and they do. I mean, I think there's a lot of value in all of this. You know, people think sometimes the people who are in the truth movement and not in the spiritual side of it as well, they actually think we're mad when we say things like that. But I've had so many experiences where, you know, something goes wrong in when I've rented an accommodation and nobody's ever taken any meter readings and I've never paid for the electricity. And that isn't because I've refused to, it's because they've never asked me to.
That's
so
cool.
You know, I mean, all sorts of things have happened to me like that. And I know it can happen. But if I look at what I know about the situation for everybody else and people like me who are of pensionable age, I mean, I don't have riches behind me. I don't own anything either. I mean, I don't own anything. And it would be difficult if I didn't live on the level that I live on. So I know the difficulties other people are in. And when you say comfortable, I feel comfortable anywhere. And like you, I've lived in tents. I've lived in vans. I've lived in lots of different places to teach me. So and been evicted and homeless and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So you learn that home is where your heart and your breath is.
Oh, absolutely, Linda. Absolutely.
You know, but when I look around me and I see what's happening, like the old man next door to me, I mean, he's 79. I shouldn't call him old, should I? Because he's so athletic out there, chopping his wood and everything and running up and down his garden. But he wouldn't put his heating on in the winter. He would not put that central heating on. He only put it on when he really got cold. And he was outside chopping the wood. He would go out and chop the wood that people were giving him. People were bringing old pallets and that. And he wouldn't do it. See, his generation won't build up bills that they can't pay because they think they'll go to prison if they don't pay them. I just said to him, don't be daft. Just use whatever heat you want. And if you pay it, you pay it. If you don't, you don't. Nothing happens, because that's been my experience of it. But I honour him for who he is and what he does. And I must admit, it kept him healthy during the winter because he was out there chopping wood. It didn't do him any harm. But that is the mentality of people who are in that older generation as well. Who, you know, like, he's nearly as old as my dad. My dad's in his 80s and the guy next door is 80 this year. And it's like, they won't. I've taught my dad about what's happening in the world, and he's listening now. Took him years to start listening to me, but he is listening now. But you've got, most people can't pay easily. They're all up to their eyes in debt, and they don't have enough money to, except for the rich. You've got all separated. You know what the English working middle and higher class is like. So so it's very much like that. But so it isn't that, I mean, people sit and watch their telly. They still live those lives. I've not had a telly for years and years and years, but they do, you know, they live in their limited existence.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the revolution in that way isn't happening to the man in the street here either. And this is where, when you start talking real, you know, when we're on Facebook, we kind of live in an igloo, don't we? We live in our center of influence there of all these awakened people. Mm-hmm. And yet, when you come into your own society and your community, you can see that we are a drop in the ocean. And the ocean is full of unconsciousness and lack of awareness still. And I keep it very real on that. I'm not in an illusion about that, you know.
No, I'm not either. And I live around mostly students. Where I am, there's students in this house. I mean, there's four apartments and they're all students. And then there's students in the house in the front. And they're totally unaware of what's going on. Totally.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where they just need to be. You know, you wake up as many people as you can and keep on doing it. And touch base with those that, like you and I, are having this wonderful talk this morning.
Yep.
I am just delighted to be talking with you and listening to you. And there's many, many others who obviously enjoy your programs. And what you have to say and what the people you get on have to say. So you're doing an enormously incredible job just taking this on, this responsibility here.
Well, thank you. It's good that people are enjoying it, because I do it because I must.
Uh-huh.
There's some, yeah. You know, I did drop it for a while, and then I came quickly back. I thought, shall I have a rest? And I think I had a few weeks off, and I felt the real need to keep it real and to keep doing what we need to do on our own blueprints, to wake more up, because the reality is that there's still a long, long way to go. And I think that's why it's been so good talking to you and what's happening in your life, what brought you to that point, like when things happen to us that we could look on as being bad, or we've lost something or whatever, or things haven't turned out as we expected. That's when we move within ourselves, and I think this is the power in everything. That, like we can say, a lot of people can't pay their bills, but they're still in there watching the telly. They're not doing anything about it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Do you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, maybe they need to go further and further down. I have this kind of theory that the people that are called the cabal are actually helping people to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about that they are the ones, you know, all the so-called mishaps are what wake us up. Yeah. All the horrendous things that happen. I mean, that's what powers me to do more, is that I want it to be the equality. I want no man to go to bed hungry. I want no man not to have warmth and shelter. No man on this planet, you know, and that's how I feel about it. And yet I know, in a way, that also the part of the transition we're in right now is that journey where we need to sometimes go hungry to wake up. It's kind of a dichotomy, isn't it? Because,
well, it is. And something I read recently in one of these books is there always has to be a balance.
Yeah.
And the balance is towards, it goes both ways. It's being poor, perhaps, and being well off or comfortable or whatever. And if it gets off balance, then you go one way or the other. Although I haven't noticed it going towards the wealthy yet for me, but that's okay. But the balance is I am in between. That's where the balance is. Is it?
Yeah.
I don't feel poor. And I don't feel wealthy. I don't need the money to be who I am. And I don't need to be bemoaning my situation whenever something, you know, doesn't work. So I have to understand that this is a balancing act. I need to take a look at, this is happening. So there must be a balance here to make this go in just a more comfortable direction. So where's the center of this? And I'm the center of it.
Yes, And that's the important thing, because we intend it. I truly believe that as we think, so we are. And I think if you keep thinking about that balance, where it's not where you're over wealthy or you're under wealthy, it's that you're in that balance in the center. You have what you need. And it's also to do with that is linking it in with the fact that we're here on a mission. We're here on a spiritual mission. And if we can keep centered on that, we don't need a lot for that, do we? You know,
no,
it's kind of, you know, when you bring it back to where it really is. And I think it's interesting for people like you and I, who've gone through lots of different experiences in our lives, both physical, emotional, monetary, everything. Is you are put on your laurel to remember that a lot. And I think it's important. And I think in a way it's been a gift. I mean, I see my life as a gift, and it hasn't been, it didn't flow in completely one direction to a particular goal. But it's been a gift because I've learned so much. And I'm sure
you... Well, that's how I feel too. I really do. Whatever I've experienced has been a gift to me. I might not have enjoyed it at the time and thought, oh, well, this is terrible. But the fact is that it was a gift because it pushed me on. And, you know, if I need that push, then okay, I got it. And
there's nothing standard about lives, is there? I mean, we're all here on a mission, and this standard society life that people think that we should align with is a complete falsity, I think. You know, I feel like I'm a fringe dweller. I live on the edge of that. I partake of it occasionally, but I don't. That's not how my life has revolved somehow.
So mine hasn't either. I mean, I wasn't even at, never quite felt like I belonged when I was a kid, and anywhere. And I always thought, oh, well, I should have stayed in England. You know, my family should have stayed in England, then I would have belonged. But the fact is that I didn't belong because I was in a different space or a different place to many of my school friends, that's all, or their schoolmates. Mm. And I was thinking different things. I was thinking, which I didn't know about at the time. But that's what kept me moving. If I had joined the club one way or another, then I don't think I'd be where I am today, feeling comfortable about whatever is going on, you know, with my life.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I remember the same, always thinking, and since I've been on Facebook particularly, because you're meeting all the people who did feel different. And then I started to think, I went through a period thinking everybody in this world feels that they're different. And then I realized that's not true. I went through different phases of that, and then realizing we are odd. We are different because I just know in every way now that that is true, that we walked beyond the line that the normal person walk, and we always will.
Yes, and that's comfortable. And we are also together with, you know, we're also, those people are also part of who we are as well. And
I like to call it way showers.
I'm just writing this down. That's nice. I like that.
Yeah, why showers? Because it's just a kind of neutral statement, but it kind of explains it to me. And I know that even when I try and get off the path of being a way shower, I'm quickly shoved back on it just by how I feel, how I think, what I perceive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think carry on.
But you've got a lot of energy to do this. I mean, this is really... you're doing what you know is the right thing for you to be doing, and it's going well for you. And you're moving a lot of you're making a lot of people, you know, stop to think. Oh, wow! You know, there are other points of view here, and I think that's what you're doing. You're giving us all the opportunity to learn and to grow through your programs and what you have to say.
Yeah, we get a lot of emails come in, and people do find it useful, and I love that they respond to us in that way, that they think that, just talking about whatever, sometimes something in the conversation will just light them up in a different way and set them on a slightly different path. And I think that's the important thing, is to keep it where people can pick up and learn from it, not go too into an illusionary type, because you can go into an illusionary type spirituality where people think it's untouchable. And I think that is, this is so real. This is when I was younger, when I first woke up to like the levels of awareness and the now moment, we were taught at a mystery school, myself and a group of people, and they said it was the way of the householder. And I found that really interesting. They said, this is not the way of the man up the mountain, where you cut yourself off and you go and meditate up a mountain. This is the way of the householder, where you will be in, for all sense and purpose, it looks like you're in the world, but you're not of it.
No.
So, they were teaching us techniques to be in the now moment, to meditate, and to see things differently. But to actually be the householder in the society, and that was interesting, because that's where all the way showers are. There, the way showers are not up the mountains.
No,
we have to be in society, and I think we have a responsibility to keep running on our blueprint, however crazy sometimes it seems, and how we do seem the one who's doing it. And nobody else is doing it. I feel like that sometimes, certainly in the area I'm in at the moment. But like you say, we can go on Facebook and see people from all over the world, and it's brilliant, because you feel, there's some company there. They understand me. It's great, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it is.
Well, I'm going to let you go. I hope this hasn't been too long for you, because we've been on here an hour and a half now, nearly.
Yes, we have, haven't we? I've loved every minute of it.
I'm glad. I want you to come back.
Well, I shall come back. I'll read some more books and I'll come back.
Well, have a look and see. What I'd love you to do as well is see what them students are up to. See whether any of them are away. See if there's any Freeman movement or anybody who's actually doing anything that's non-complying, to the bad system that we're supposed to comply to. And how many people are standing up in their sovereignty? That sort of thing would be great. And do you have anything like a transition town or an eco thing? That would be brilliant. It'll be good, probably be good for you too, to find those things out. But certainly coming back and telling us what you're feeling at the time as well. Come back in a month or so, whenever you feel like it. And that would be great. Because we're real people, Barbara. We're part of the one. We are the awakening humanity. We're not that much of oddballs not to still be part of humanity. And I think it's important to get real comments on the ground,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I will take it up with the students and find out what's going on. I can, easy enough to go to the university and see what they've posted, for one thing, on their notice boards,
That would be good.
Upcoming events, and then start talking with them. And I can do that at City College as well.
So that's brilliant, because it will bring a reality to the show on what's going on. Like, I'm in the UK, you're in the States. How can we tell you that we're in the middle of a revolution, or that people are really, really changing, or what is really happening? That's how I'd like to be able to report. That would be brilliant.
Yes, it would. We'll do that.
And thank you again. That's brilliant. Thank you very much for being here and being part of the show.
Oh, you're most welcome. It's my absolutely my pleasure, and it was so nice meeting you and talking with you today.
And thank you.
So I look forward to another time.
You landed on our page, and look what came out of it. There you go.
Oh,
you were the magic thousandth member.
thousandth member.
Yeah, we didn't give you a gift of money. We gave you a gift of time on the show. So
that's a blessing, a real blessing. Thank you very, very much.
That's all right.
That's better than anything, as a matter of fact, Linda. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought it would be good, but I didn't know why. And then I found out who you were.
Yeah, you know why. All right, sweetie.
That was real good synchronicity, that was. Take care.
Take care. Thank you, Linda.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That's been absolutely brilliant having Barbara on there. What a joy to listen to her talking about her path and her awakening. And she's a real person, you know. I love this. This isn't this is somebody who's been motoring along all through the years and waking up and learning more things and having that stillness within inside of herself. She's not, you know, a famous person. She's an amazing person, extraordinary person who's living out there in Santa Barbara and hopefully going to be coming back and reporting to us what is going on at the university, the large university in her city. She lives in a place that's a lot of people there, 89,000 I think she said, but she reckons it's more like 125,000 who actually live there. And we're getting really reports on the ground as to what is truly happening. I like to keep it real, and we want to talk about what's, you know, how big of a movement are we really getting. And I think by having people in different areas, and maybe we'll try and open up, I know a couple of people in Germany that I might be able to get on the show, and other areas, we'll go into our network and have a look and see who's around from the different areas and see if we can't get reporting coming through. That sounds like a good idea to me, because, you know, that will give us a really good look as to what is actually going on. And certainly with the non-compliance thing, which we really need to be happening more. So, you know, it's been an interesting show so far, because I wasn't on my own on here. I know Barbara was quite concerned about doing maybe just 20 minutes, but we've used an hour and a half just of the show. So let me just think about this, because, you know, it was an interesting title, thinking about the awakening journey of humanity. And obviously we're all part of that journey. And what is that journey? What, you know, how many layers are there within that journey of how do we wake up, and what are we awakening up to? You know, even talking to Barbara there, you can see there's different elements of that. There's the spiritual side of it, and Barbara's path is very much like my own. Mine was an awakening to the spiritual part of myself first, and then an awakening to the truth in the world. And we have right now with the movement that is going on, we have, and certainly on the internet, we have that split still into two separate movements, but we have also now a coming together of the two. And I don't feel that's like an easy joining in a lot of ways for some people, because those who didn't do the awakening journey with themselves first find it very difficult if they've come through the more aggressive, more 3D area of the awakening on, say, the financial side, or the truth of the governments and the truth of the bankers. And then it's harder for them to see a need for awakening on the more spiritual side. But we have actually got, you know, we've got signs of emerging, I think, there. I don't know how bonded that is yet, and how smooth that journey is, but I can see the difficulties for people in actually seeing whether there is a need to go any further than the more activist, aggressive side of it, which is, as I say, more political, more to do with the financial side. But certainly, you know, the ultimate journey is the awakening on all levels, on all aspects. And if you haven't started the journey yet on the spiritual side, then just have a go at practicing being more conscious by being conscious of your breath. It's free. It's simple. There's no hocus pocus about it. You know, it isn't some mystical, crazy meeting that you're going to have to go to. You haven't got to go and bow down to somebody or put silly clothes on or do anything silly, or, you know, an easy way is to start putting your attention on your breath. I've said this many, many times on the 3-year shows that I've done, is 10 minutes putting your attention on your breath in the morning and maybe 10 minutes in the evening where you sit quiet, and every time your breath, your attention, your consciousness goes off your breath, gently bring it back. You will see a complete change in how you deal with things in your life. Such a beautiful change, in that you will be so much more detached in quite a short time. You know, because the vibration has gone up more, you know, it recently, over the past 6 months, the vibration is finer now, it's higher. And it's been going up for the last decade after decade. It's been going higher and higher, okay? We haven't reached that climax yet. We've got a much bigger wave that will come in at some point, and I think that's going to be soon. But the increments that it has gone up with makes it easier for people to be able to put their consciousness on their breath and to hold it there, and to get benefits from that quicker because of the lightness of the vibration now in the actual planetary atmosphere, if you like, the cosmic particles. So just doing that, even if you're somebody who's just stuck to the truth movement, the activist movement or whatever, or the eco movement, lots of people have been very, very involved with the eco movement and growing and the conservation, but are not so involved in the inner within themselves, the more spiritual side and aspects of themselves. And bringing all of it in together now is what is required for us to actually complete our pathway on this planet and our evolvement. That journey, that awakening journey of humanity, is all aspects of this. It is looking at what is going on in front of your eyes. But in order to see that in a discerning way, then it would be much better for you to do the awakening journey in yourself. And when I was talking to Barbara, we were both talking about the discerning. You know, even when you're on Facebook, which is a brilliant tool, to be able to know when something feels like it's not totally true. When you can feel the resonance. Now, that's when you've done some of the inner work. You won't be going towards that information with a mind perception only. You'll be going towards it with your mind open, but with your heart and your resonance feeling the way for you. I call it feeling the field. Reading the field is a term that I use a lot. So sometimes I'm reading the field around something that somebody's written, and I'm feeling like, yeah, this is good, but there's something not quite right about it. And it might take me 6 months for the truth to come out and to find out, but I'll know it's not something I'm going to run with. And it won't be that everything is wrong about it. It'll be just that it's never going to materialize, or that one fundamental aspect of what is being written about is not true. And it won't be a lot of the time that I can tell you what it is, but sometimes I do the research, and it will take me weeks to keep going back in and doing a bit more research to find out, you know, what is the fundamental thing that I feel is wrong about this. And this is, you know, when you've got that awakening inside yourself and that finer discernment, then you'll be doing this all the time, which means you won't run down so many alleyways. So for anybody who hasn't done the inner awakening and hasn't put so much energy into that over the years, I would suggest that that's the bit to play catch up on, because it quickens the journey on all the other areas. Like if you do the spiritual work and the discernment within yourself and the disciplines that help you to tune in to who you really are, then you will appreciate the planet so much more than just worrying about the degradation of the ground and all of that. You will be in a spin with it, in the frequency with it, with the planet. And that's on a whole different level than just being a conservationist. I mean, I've met some conservationists who really don't take it to the depth that they could take it to. And they might be like a halfway on their mission, but they're never going to retrieve the whole of their blueprint on what they should be doing unless they started meditating or being in conscious attunement with their own breath and therefore their own being. So that's that, you know, if anybody asks me what the most important part of the journey is, it has to be the disciplines. Whatever anybody else and any other groups might be telling you, try it. Prove me wrong. But, doing the meditation, feeding yourself right. You know, there was a great video this week that I watched that came from Max Egan, actually, who's usually doing the other more worldly stuff. And what he had on there was, well, he actually had a guest on who talked about, and there were four videos of this. I think it went on for about an hour and short videos. And you can find the first one of these videos, and it will be headed up Max Egan. And it will say Candida on that video heading, but it will be on our network at www.universallyaware.ning.com. And we have about 4,700 videos on there. We can keep you busy for the next year on there finding out about things. But in depth, he did this interview with this guy who really knows his stuff on not only the health damage that Candida can do to your system, but the fact that it brings down your levels of awareness. And I just thought that is brilliant that they did a whole show about it, because a lot of people talk about Candida as a health problem. They don't necessarily talk about how befuddled people's minds are when they live in a state of having Candida throughout their system, because it also goes into the brain, and they will be on such a lower level of awareness. And the other thing there, not only with the Candida, but is the parasite issue, in that if people have not done a deep cleanse and a killing off of the parasites in your body, and certainly if you're still eating meat, then you're going to be full of parasites. This isn't just a fear-mongering here. If you talk to somebody who does the, I'm trying to think what they call it, you know, when somebody dies and they cut the person open to see what they died of, I can't think for the love of me right now of what that's called, but they do this examination where they cut it all open and see what's inside. There are horrendous stories from these people who do those operations after death and the examination of parasites just crawling out of the body. And there are also, you know, incredible stories of people who are so full of parasites that they're coming out of their eyes, they're coming out of all their orifices. And I was actually on a course up in Scotland, and there was a guy on the course, and we got talking one night in a group. I was talking to them about my cross pulser, which I had with me, which you use for so many hours in the beginning to kill all the parasites in your body, and then you use it regularly. And the little electric charge that it gives you kills off the parasites. And he actually said that he saw this quite large parasite coming out of his body. He actually, you know, caught it coming out. And it wasn't small. This was not a threadworm. This was a large thing. And this isn't, you know, you just don't, people don't want to talk about this stuff. But what it's actually doing, I'm not just talking about health hazards here. I'm talking about mental hazards. I'm talking about awareness, spirituality hazards, where, you know, if you're infested with parasites, then they are pulling on your energy and on your discernment. And the first thing you feel if you kill off all the parasites is you will start to feel that you are now choosing what you want to eat. And there isn't some underlying feeling that you need to keep eating that doesn't seem to be coming from your discerning mind. That goes completely. Excuse me. Bob Beck was the one who came up with the really basic pulser that you make yourself for about $5. Check him up on Google. Some people have taken that pulser and made it into a more of a healing device with other things added. And the Croft pulser that I have is a Bob Beck pulser. It was made for me because I really didn't want to muck around with wires and batteries and not know totally what I was doing. And it has a Tesla coil in it, which brings total balance to your system. And it also has very strong earth magnets. And then it has the Bob Beck pulser, electric pulse as well. So it works on three levels. And you can get that by just Googling Croft pulser. Cost me about £84, English pounds, off the internet, and that was including postage. Lots of my friends have also got them now, and they are absolutely brilliant. I often wear one when I'm on a journey, and I'll have it on my arm for like an hour journey on my shoulder, just to keep the healing pulse and the awareness coming in. It's absolutely brilliant. But what we're talking about here is the awakening journey of humanity. Now, there are billions of people on this planet who have not done a cleanse to kill the parasites that are guiding their level of awareness, which is incredible, isn't it? I mean, that's apart from the fact that you've got people with the candida fungus, which Max goes into as well. They do talk a little bit about parasites on there, but the parasite problem is just as bad, or if not more, and more prevalent than candida. I would say there's more people with parasites that are bringing down their level of awareness than there are with candida. And then you've got all the people who are still drinking the fluorine in the water. So if you haven't got yourself a distiller yet, check out Andrew Norton Weber on his videos to see how amazing it is to cleanse yourself with distilled water and get your level of awareness going up as well. I did an amazing interview with Dave Murphy, who spent 30 days drinking his urine, which is also distilled water, and he drank or ate nothing else at all during that 30 days. He cured all the illnesses that he'd had for years, and he brought himself through on another level. Listen to that interview. That's on the archives on our Blog Talk radio show. And there's many more people out there. I've been on distilled water now myself for about 9 months. And when I went I had an appointment with a clinic because during an eye test, it was found that I had pressure in my eye that was high. So the guy gave me some drops and said, put these in your eye. And I started to get side effects immediately. So I stopped and I decided that I'd go back and see him and see if there was anything else he could give me that wasn't detrimental to my health. And he gave me another bottle of different drops. And I said to him, well, I'm going to try distilled water now. I'm going to drink distilled water. And he just sort of smiled. And I came away with the drops, which I never took. And then I had an appointment set I asked him about laser surgery to cure and open the channels up that were blocked in my eye, giving the high pressure. And when I went for that appointment, 3 months later to have the surgery done, I had to go in and have all the pressures tested so they could see how bad it was. And they went through all the tests again and they just said to me, it's stopped, it's gone. We're not doing any surgery today. And I told them what I was doing. And they looked surprised, but they kind of took it in their stride. And they said to me, well, it's gone. You don't need surgery. There is no problem now. And come back in a year and we'll check it again. So incredible things can happen. I know people who've had all sorts of things. Now we're looking at, cleansing every part of yourself so that you have an opportunity of being able to utilize the higher energies that are there, that are coming into your body, that you're breathing in. They're in the atmosphere. They're all around us. They're energetic. So if you have a good vehicle You've got a cleansed, highly tuned vehicle. And this means get rid of the parasites, get rid of the candida, don't drink water with chemicals in it that are setting you back. Eat high energy food. And is this making sense? Because I know a lot of people want to stay away from all the natural eating. They think it's all a bit of a fad. But, you know, if you start to comprehend that it's to do with your awareness, does that make it a difference for you? Does that make it viable to think about doing it? I hope so. Because a lot of people don't understand this. They think there's just health freaks out there who are scared of dying or getting old or whatever. But it's also to do with awareness. It's about being able to discern differently. It's about being able to activate and intend things that happen in front of your eyes. It's about being able to use the magic. Because the magic is just about a higher facility of using energy. Now, you know, if you've got a highly tuned instrument, then you can do better things with it. And that's what your body is. But you need to treat that body right. And by doing all the things that are to do with the higher frequencies, to do with being able to what can we call it? I'm trying to think of the words electrically here. Conduct. You're conducting the energy as it's coming in, like electricity. You need to conduct that energy. And then you're putting it back out, aren't you, in what you do. Your energy, your vibration, your presence. Barbara and I were both talking about when you meet somebody on a very much a master, somebody who is sovereign, who is totally who they really are. And when I talk about Miraji, that brings back the memory of his resonance and what that made me feel to be around somebody who was a true master and had that true presence. And Barbara was talking about her Sufi master that she met and some other people. And you never forget that. If you've ever been in the presence of somebody who truly is encompassing that, and their vehicle is so highly tuned that you recognize that immediately. And this is where, you know, we're growing in that. We need to keep our frequency high. We, you know, I said this earlier, we're the way showers. Anybody who's awake now are part of the way shower movement, because the billions out there aren't awake yet. They may be stirring. But most of them are just stirring. So the way showers are the ones who are going to be leading the way on this. And we have a responsibility to keep our frequency as high as possible right now. You know, ready for that wave that is coming into this planet. Believe me, we haven't even touched the height of this yet. And it's not to do with the financial system changing. It's not to do with, I mean, this is, you know, all this stuff we do in standing in our sovereignty is one thing on the financial side and the non-compliance. But without the magic, without the higher energy in you, it doesn't have a real impact. So doing this, and ultimately, it isn't going to be that important. What is important is, where is your frequency at? How are you going to hold this as more and more energy comes into the planet and more of the old breaks down? And I found it really interesting talking to Barbara when she was talking about these women. You know, when she was homeless and she was in her car, living in her car with her two big dogs, and all these other women were living in the parking lot in their cars with their animals. And when I asked her, she said at the moment there's 400 around 400 people living in their cars, in car lots, in Santa Barbara, which is quite a high-end type place, you know, money place. Now, all those people, they're the people that can survive when everything else starts to break down. It's not the people who are in the boat, you know. It's not the people who are skiing on top of the mountain up at Aspen with all their money, who know how to survive. It's the people who've had to live through sorts of stuff like this now. They are the way showers. They are the ones that know your life doesn't end when you you lose your house, lose your home. Life doesn't end when you lose your job. It gives you a chance to find out who you really are. How strong are you really inside? So the awakening journey of humanity has many levels. There's many functions within that awakening that need to start happening and lighting up with inside of you. Culminating in being who you truly are. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen with one bit of truth being told to you. There's many, many layers of this. And it's just an exciting journey to keep breaking through the veils, going through to the next layer. And hopefully inspiring people as you wake up, you know, take up that chance to be out there, be public, be verbal. You know, go and talk to other people. We have more and more people opening up shows like this. I love it. You know, and some young people starting to come onto Blog Talk and just tell their story and just be who they truly are or take up a particular issue. We need more and more people to do it. It's very simple just to start up your own show. I know Jennifer, who used to be on a show with myself, we did the show on a Thursday night. She's now starting up her own show, starting to interview people about their awakening journeys, but also people who've written books and want to get the information out there about those. Watch out for that one coming up. We've got lots more people. We need to be vocal. We need to be seen now. It's not time to hide away. There was a time when I think it was pretty scary if you were somebody awake. And in the early days, you know, you sometimes had to keep a bit quiet. And certainly some people have been put in mental institutions and all sorts for saying stuff too early and saying too much to the wrong people. But now it's a time to be more and more open about who you are, where you're from, what you've done, what awoken you, you know, because it could help the next person. Or maybe, you know, on the radio show, that's a good medium to do it, but you can also do it with groups in your community. I've certainly started to find people locally and try and see what's going on. I've actually, you know, gone to the transition group that's local in my town. I haven't been back here very long, but I've found out that there is a group that operates and there's various things on there. List of what's happening during the next month. So I'll be opening that up and seeing what's going on. I've found somebody who's possibly very much into what I'm into. I haven't been able to find them on Facebook yet, but I heard their name mentioned at the transition group, and they've gone a lot further into what's truly going on to the planet. I don't know whether they're going to be willing to run a local meeting with me, but this is the sort of thing to do. There's not a lot of it on the ground out there yet. But we're all spread out, and that's how it was meant to be. Nothing's gone wrong here. We're spread out all across the world. And now it's time to maybe, you know, get in touch with more and more people, not just finding your own comfort on the Facebook pages. The awakening of humanity is about the whole, everyone. Everyone who can wake up. Everybody has that possibility. Some people are not choosing to go that route. Some people are just late starters. But a lot of stirring. I will say that. There's a stirring going on. I don't think the whole movement isn't moving in like a great rush yet. That's not happening. I think we need to keep real with it so that we get a handle on what is possible to do and what isn't. Because if you rush too quick or you get the wrong idea, then you can't give people what they need. And in the beginning, it's really a gentle introduction. You can't shock people into finding out what's going on. You take them on a journey. So you need to read where people are at and give it to them in portions that they're able to absorb and digest, and not frighten them off. And certainly not set them up with illusions. You know, stay with the truth. We don't have to make this more than it is. It's amazing what we're going through here, the evolutionary journey that we're on. We don't have to make it into something that it isn't. There's magic in what it is. So keep it really real. Don't expand it and exaggerate it. You don't have to do that. I'd just like to say that next week I have a lady called Suzanne Possell on, and she's very active with an anti-Agenda 21 campaign and anti-transition towns. Now, I really don't know what's going on with transition towns in the US, which is where she comes from, but I do know what's going on with transition towns in UK. So this is going to be a lively discussion, I think, between the two of us. And I'd like to know more from her as to what's truly going on and what she truly knows about what's happening on the ground in the United States. And I'm sure she's going to tell us all of that. And she's been very verbal in her blogs about it. And anybody who wants to ring in and tell me any experiences and her that they're having with transition towns and Agenda 21. Now, you can tell us where you think it's good or where you think it's going wrong, because we're both going to be open to hearing what's happening there. And we'll certainly have question time after the first hour and see how many people want to ring in and join in on the discussion, because knowing what's actually happening in your area is more important than a theory on it. So hopefully we're going to get really real with that. And I'm going to play us out now with Danny Allen with that wonderful song that he sang live on our show. And namaste, and thank you for listening.
Are you hearing that okay?
Lovely.
Sounds great.
We are.
Up, my friends, what happens now depends on your state of mind. 'Cause we have been deceived, and we gotta believe. Open up your eyes, you've been blind. Your freedoms have been taken from you, but in your heart you know what is true. Our rights have been undermined. Their statute laws and all their acts, they don't apply if we don't contract. So stop paying all of their fines, and love will set you free. Love will set us free. Love will set you free. 'Cause they can't manipulate peace and harmony. Bill Hicks said it's just a choice between love and fear. You gotta find your voice and shout it loud through a megaphone. And don't let them vaccinate you, and don't let them manipulate you. But violence I don't condone. This is a spiritual revolution. It's all part of our evolution, but our fate is still unknown. So wake up, my friends, the future now depends on you. So lead us home, and love will set you free. Love will set us free. Love will set you free. 'Cause they can't manipulate peace and harmony.